is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into the Lombardi Line on VSIN and DraftKings Network. This show, as always, presented by DraftKings alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive and strategist Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. We got a little college hoops to get into, a lot of NFL because the sound bites and information rule changes coming out of the NFL owner meetings from Orlando, Michael, are coming in hot. How are we feeling about things so far that have come through?
I mean, if Pinocchio was down in Orlando, would his nose be coming way out or what? I mean, like, seriously, like 1 minute somebody says, oh, you know, we got our man Woody Johnson saying, you know, we're not going to trade Zach Wilson. You gave him permission to trade him. Nobody wants him. You're going to keep him. Oh, why'd you sign Tyrod Taylor? And then we got Robert Kraft. Well, you know, the facilities. I didn't know anything about the facilities. But I was responsible for winning six Super Bowls, if you just watch my documentary. Like, what is, like, does anybody not remember what they said a day ago? I mean, is it unbelievable?
It is extremely special, some of the things that are coming out. You're just like, do you actually believe some of the words that come out of your mouth? Basically, bless Jerry Jones's heart, but everything that I've heard from him sounds like word salad at this point. But there have been some things that have been factual, Michael, that have come out. Most notably, a significant overhaul to the kickoff in the National Football League. So to lay this out real quickly for anybody that hasn't heard exactly the details yet, the kicker will still kick from his own 35-yard line while all of his teammates are downfield on the opponent's 40 and the receiving team lines up on their own 35. So it's 5 yards separating both teams in this case. Everybody's lined up that close together. The two returners can be deeper, but no one but the kicker and returner can move until the ball is either fielded or hits the ground. Touchbacks will be marked at the 30. There are no fair catches. What is your reaction to the new kickoff? And obviously the intention behind this to limit those high collision hits, but still have more returns.
I'm surprised. I really am. I never thought they would get this passed. I thought this was too gimmicky, but you know, I've been in enough owner meetings to know that it's a lot like how Lyndon Johnson ran the Senate when he was there. You know, he never called a vote that he didn't know he was going to win. So, you know, when they voted on this, you knew it was going to get through. Three teams said no. They couldn't find four other teams to go with them. So they had the votes and go. I just feel like they say there's going to be more returns, but you've actually had more practical experiences watching it. I find that really they've taken a really good play out of the game, not the onside kick that we see when you're down two scores, but the onside surprise kick, the one where you want to change momentum, the one that Sean Payton was able to operate to win a Super Bowl against the Indianapolis Colts. Like, you've just eliminated that from the, because now you've got to alert the officials you're going to onside kick.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the formation changes, which seems really unfair, especially if you're playing a team like the Chiefs who can score and you're trying to gain an extra possession. Like, I don't think there was enough second order thinking to this decision. I think everything gets put under the condition of player safety, player safety, player safety. And I get it. We need player safety. But we know that the drag down tackle, they can say whatever they want. More players spoke against it than were for it, right? It's going to be hard to officiate. Scott Novak, I probably was in his backyard last night throwing flags just to make sure he could get going on it because he knows he's going to call 20 of them at least, right? Get that arm limbered up. So they can't officiate that play. I just think to me it's, you know, I thought it was too gimmicky, but you have more experience in it and maybe you enjoyed it and maybe I'll learn to love it.
So what the thing is that stands out to me about it, Michael, is it's just very jarring to our eyes because we're so accustomed to seeing an NFL kickoff, a college football kickoff, a very specific way. It does promote returns. Like in the XFL, over the two seasons that it was used, 90% of kickoffs were returned, which does make for fun and exciting plays. It's just the look of it, I think, just your word gimmicky, it throws people off. It's something that we're not familiar with. And fortunately, this is just a one-year trial. So similar to the fair catch rule that we saw instituted last year, if the league doesn't like it, if it doesn't work, they don't have to bring it back and they won't. We'll see how things play out with this. I think it's interesting. I hope that it does work in terms of promoting returns because the league had an NFL like historic low last year of below 22% of kickoffs being returned. It was the first Super Bowl ever not to have a single return. Hopefully that changes and that this will be a positive. But as of right now, like I said, even the UFL didn't reinstitute it this year when they merged with the USFL. So I was very, very surprised that the NFL got the votes. But to your point earlier, if they're putting something up to a vote, they're only going to do that if the plan is that they will get it passed. And the only teams that objected from a voting standpoint, the Raiders, Packers, and 49ers, them questioning potential unintended consequences, use the word gimmicky for you as well. Dan Campbell reportedly was in favor of it. Andy Reid said he thinks that it could be exciting. Mike Tomlin used a word you use, that it's radical change for the NFL. It's questionable. So we'll see. My one last question on this before we move on. Like, could this introduce new strategy? Like, will teams have to think about the kickoff differently moving forward? And how might that change for rosters as far as special teams that they want to keep on the team?
No question, you know, because usually your frontline guys in the normal kickoff were guys who could run, get in position, set up the wedge, even though they took the wedge out of it, you know, that the returns were always audible returns, right? So it could be right alley, check to left alley based on where the ball went. And so the players kind of communicated and knew what they were going to do. But I think you're going to have to look at this in a little different light, you know, who they put across, because it used to be we wanted fast guys on the kickoff coverage mm-hmm. team. Well, now it isn't about having fast guys. It's about having guys that can blow things up, right? And I know this. It doesn't take a lot of room to have violent collisions. Mm-hmm. Like this notion that because you're running at 40 yards, the collisions are worse. How many times have we seen a guy come over the middle and get lit up in a 3-yard box period, right? And, you know, you just see it. I just find it hard to believe that this is going to be something that we're all going to enjoy. But, you know, look, they're trying to get it through the idea of player safety, which, again, it keeps you at bay from arguing it with it because they claim they have the facts, which they obviously have the chalk last.
Another item that we saw move through, the owners approved a trade deadline that will be pushed back 1 week to the Tuesday after the week 9 games. What's the impact?
Well, so that means there's 8 more games left to go in the season, right? And so now you pretty much have an idea whether you're in or you're out. And if you have a guy, and we see this happen now all the time, Chase Young gets traded to San Francisco for a 3. Based on his contract, will they get a compensatory 3 back? I don't know. But I think you're going to see teams that are out of it probably sell off more guys than they would have, than they typically would have with that extra week, because it kind of has a sense of it. And, you know, I think that allows teams to be a little bit more aggressive, because if you're in week 9 and you've got a chance to really close it down with one more player, add a player, you may be willing to pay a little bit more to get that player than you would have been if you were not sure where your status was in week 6 or week 7 of the season.
Michael, what do you think of the Christmas Day edition that we have seen here? Because there was some speculation if we would see a Christmas Day game this year because December 25th falls on a Wednesday. It turns out there will, in fact, be 2 games played on a Wednesday. The NFL is officially taking over every day on the calendar, Michael.
Yeah, in December, it's so good.
They won't let the NBA have
anything.
You think
you own Christmas Day?
Yeah.
You think you own Christmas Day? I think you don't. I mean, you could put LeBron on there. You can put whatever you want on there. We're going to own Christmas Day, okay? Look, and then what they're also going to do is they're going to allow those teams that play Christmas Day, they're going to back up. They're going to play on Saturday before mm-hmm. Christmas. So it becomes a normal Thursday week for them. They play Saturday. And then it's like having a Thursday game. It's like Sunday to Thursday, but now we got Saturday to Wednesday. Stay with me if you will. Now, fortunately for us, we have Will Hill on after in this hour. So we'll be able to get to the bottom of what he plans to do with the scheduling, because he's in charge of all that in all leagues. So we'll get to the bottom of that. But look, I'm not complaining, because I want football on Christmas Day. I love it. It was great. You know, it was tremendous. And it was enjoyable. And so I feel, you know, as part of the being in the league, your family, you don't get to see your kids, all that. Then you have the next day. But I think to me, whoever has that block of time, you better be healthy, because you could come through those that block and not be really where you want to be. But you get 10 days off to get to the next game.
And you think about some of the games we had last year, the massive upset from the Raiders over the Chiefs. You had the 49ers Ravens that more than 27.2 million viewers, like the people are sitting down there watching those games. And Field Yates put out on Twitter, starting Christmas Day, it is a week full of football because you have the Wednesday Christmas games on the 25th, Thursday night football, the 26th. You have NFL games on the 28th, the 29th, the 30th. And then the college football quarterfinals start on the 31st and the 1st with New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. So it is like we are going to be jam packed with incredible football games on our television screen for a full
week. That's so good. If I were the NBA, I might want to think about having that, you know, move the in play to like January, because I, you know, like who has room to watch all that? It's like what Larry David was saying about the brackets. How do I know how to fill out a bracket? I have no idea. I don't know any of these teams. It's like, how would you watch the NBA? You got too much to watch. It's great, isn't it?
It is a great problem to have. These are some first world problems if I've ever heard them. Roger Goodell, by the way, did say Wednesday games will, quote, not be a regular thing. Also made sure to note, too, though, that the midweek games have not seen an elevated number of injuries, which to your point about the kickoff, injuries and safety is always top of mind for the league. But I'm so excited for that week now that I've realized the way that it's all laying out day after day. It's going to be awesome. And our first expanded playoff, seeing those quarterfinals, will be great. Speaking of that bracket, Michael, we'll have Will Hill, like you referenced, coming up in about a half an hour. We'll get his favorite plays for the Sweet 16. But when we return, what's on Michael's mind and Lombardi's list? You are ranking your top five owners in the National Football League. Something tells me, despite all the wins, that Mr. Kraft might not be on it after what we just talked about a moment ago. We'll see, though. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. When you sign up today, you get your first year for only $199 instead of our usual price of $240. But you need to use our promo code Lombardi. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for the entire year, including our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus access to our March Madness betting hub where you can lock in picks for every game of the tournament thanks to our experts and guests. Remember, use the promo code Lombardi, get your first year of VSiN Pro access for $199. You can sign up at vsin.com/subscribe. Every day on the program, as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line, we have been doing a little edition of What's on Michael's Mind. Michael, what has been the wheels turning in your brain today? What's top of mind for you?
Well, this J.J. McCarthy thing is kind of intriguing, right? We see it every year at this time. We are now in week 7 of the NFL season, and the free agency is behind us, and we're moving on to the draft, and we're moving on to the draft order, and we're seeing players go up and down the odds board in terms of their draft positioning, and no one more than J.J. McCarthy this season. I mean, last year we saw Will Levis go to 4-1 to be the first pick overall in the draft. Remember, he did not get picked till the first pick of the second round. So we're seeing a ton of conversation. And I think for us as fans and a betting network, we have to separate what the noise is and what the reality is. And I think, to me, because of a couple instances, Harbaugh's praise of McCarthy, which is completely sincere, and then Pelissero's conversation, you know, what he expressed that they feel they have a read on what Adam Peters may like, has moved this number. Now, one thing we do know, we haven't played any games to move the number, right? We know the kid's a great kid, so that's always going to move it a little bit. But this seems to be a little bit high, and it seems to be the player that is the lightning rod for the teams picking below Arizona to want to try to get them to become desperate, right? You know, what does J.P. Morgan said? You know, there's always two reasons why you do something, or the real reason, the factual reason, and then the real reason, right? And I think the real reason he's moving up is because it's being created by a lot of this off-the-field chatter that is trying to drive the price of moving up.
Despite the fact that on the field, like, there are major questions from the outside looking in based on what we've seen from J.J. McCarthy during his time at McCarthy, because he wasn't asked to do a whole lot. So for anyone that missed the odds movement itself, J.J. McCarthy, when this market initially opened, was a plus 750 shot to be number two overall. Got as long as 28-1 March 18th. When we were on the show yesterday, he was still 18-1. The exact quote from Tom Pelissero on NFL Network yesterday afternoon said, "When I've had conversations here in Orlando with executives from other teams who know Commanders GM Adam Peters will know the situation well, the most popular answer for what they do at number two is J.J. McCarthy." Paired with, as you referenced, glowing rave reviews from his former head coach in Jim Harbaugh, who months ago said, "Don't be surprised if J.J. McCarthy is actually the number one overall pick." Although we know at this point it would be incredible for anyone other than Caleb Williams to be the number one overall pick. But then coming out of the pro day, "That's the best pro day I've ever seen. You should have heard all the GMs and everybody coming up talking to me. And it was so expected. I definitely knew this was going to happen." McCarthy now 4-1 to be the number two overall selection. Jaden Daniels is still a minus 170 favorite. Drake May plus 135, closely behind him. But I think it's good to note, Michael, for like our betting audience specifically, with these types of markets, they're going to be very volatile because the limits are lower, right? So if a bookmaker sees that they're taking a lot of action on something, they have to move those markets quickly. And that's why we're seeing such a significant cut down in such a short time, because this is one of the few things where the sports books can and often do lose on, because it's an information game, not a power ratings type of a game.
Yeah, and everybody's dealing blindly in this
Correct.
Game, right? I mean, nobody really knows what Washington thinks. No one has that in their head. And so you have to go by what you watch on the tape. I find it hard to believe that the man responsible for drafting Trey Lance in San Francisco, who pushed that through, who was relentless in his love affair for Trey Lance, is now the man that likes J.J. McCarthy. And look, there's enough to like about J.J. McCarthy. His third down tape is really good.
Yeah.
But there's a lot you worry about with J.J. McCarthy, right? And for him to go ahead of all these other guys, and are we sure it's coming from the tape? Once again, like, you couldn't justify Will Levis's movement on the tape. You could justify it with rhetoric. You couldn't justify it when you watch the tape. You can't justify moving McCarthy up to the second pick overall in the draft off his tape. Now, look, if McCarthy goes 2 and Patrick Mahomes had to go 10 and Lamar Jackson went 32, those guys had far better tape than McCarthy as passers. Far better. So, like, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around that. Do I think he's a great kid, and do we move players up for character reasons? Yes. Yes. But do I think he's better as a collegiate player than Jaden Daniels was last year? And does his game transcend itself to be a dominant blue chip player? That I'm not sure of that. Because remember, when the Steelers picked Kenny Pickett, Stormy, a lot of people, me included, said they still need a quarterback.
Yep.
The worst thing you want to do is pick a quarterback in the first round and still need one, which is what the Patriots did, which is what the Bears have done twice, which is what the Jets have done, although Woody thinks he's still a good player, and we can get back to that. But the reality of it is you got to be – he's got to be a player. If you're picking somebody the second pick overall, you're telling me he's going to be in the top 10 players at his position at some point in his career and should be in the top 5. I can't see that with McCarthy yet.
And Michael, you're going to love this. As we have the conversation, J.J. McCarthy's odds have been cut down yet again, plus 250. The updated odds, Jaden Daniels to go number two overall, minus 130. Drake May 2-1. J.J. McCarthy, plus 250. Okay, moving forward, Michael. And we'll talk plenty more draft. We still have an entire month before we ultimately get to day one in Detroit. But in honor of the NFL owners meetings that are going on in Orlando, Florida this week, and the NFL report cards we know that came out a month ago, this felt like a good time for Lombardi's List for you to rank your top 5 NFL owners. So hit us with the goods. Who's the best of the best and why?
Well, I mean, look, here's what I sent this to Elliot this morning, and I think this is really about organizations, right? I think this is about who runs the best organization. And so what's the criteria for that, right? You know, the Cleveland Browns over the last 5 years have spent more money than any team. Does that make them the best owners? No, because I think what they lack, the Haslam family, which they're developing more now, is the perfect criteria, which is patience, ask good questions, don't panic, have a plan, let the organization work through you, and you set the mission statement of what you want to accomplish. And so I think when you put the criteria of having good ownership in that group, the Steelers come out far and above everybody else because they never panic. You know, they ask good questions. They're willing to be very patient, and they move along. I think Baltimore's the same way. Steve Bisciotti, everybody talks about, well, they got Lamar. Well, Bisciotti's the reason they got Lamar because he asked good questions. And he challenged the people that was working for him to answer those questions. And that led him to taking Lamar Jackson, the 32nd pick in the first round. Same thing with Philadelphia. The direction set by Jeffrey Lurie is ideal. He runs the team. He sets a direction. He understands what he's looking for. He asks really good questions. Minnesota, just what I've seen from Minnesota as they've gone out of this transitional state from the Kirk Cousins era into a more let's ask questions, let's develop it. I think they look really impressive, and I think the Niners do the same thing with Jed York. I think he sees his role as somebody to push. And I think if you just need to know anything about what a good owner is, it's when Dr. York is sitting in the draft room telling Kyle Shanahan, if you like this guy, you should pick him. See, that's what owners do. They don't tell you who to pick. They make you defend what you're saying back to them. And I learned this a long time ago from the great Donnie Walsh, who was the general manager of the president of the Indianapolis Colts, Indianapolis Pacers. He would constantly say he could make any decision for the Simon family he needed to make in the best interest of basketball. But all they asked him to do was call them first so they could ask questions. And it was through his answers that he learned whether he wanted to do it or not. And I think that's the job of an owner. The job of an owner isn't what we see from Woody Johnson or what we see from Robert Kraft saying, well, I didn't know that. I didn't know this. Like, yes, you did. You work out every day in that weight room. Don't tell me. I've seen you in that weight room numerous times. Don't tell me you don't know what's going on in a weight room. Like that's not believable, right? And don't tell me you only will trade a player when you've been trying to trade a player. Like, that means you're intimately involved. We know Kraft's intimately involved. He's already told us that in a 10-part documentary. That's why they won 6 Super Bowls. So I think, to me, it's about asking the right questions.
To your point about Kraft in the weight room, it was a very similar situation for the Kansas City Chiefs, who made it open that they wanted upgrades to their locker room because it was bad. And what did they do? They gave them some swivel chairs. This is an organization that's winning multiple Super Bowls, and you can't give them an upgraded locker room and some decent chairs? What are we talking about here? So take note, David Tepper. Take note, a number of NFL owners. This is what it's like to have your team and to have a lot of other people on the outside looking in respect what you are doing. We're going to hit the break. Back to College Hoops with Will Hill next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are rolling along on a Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Let's get into a little college hoops conversation as we welcome in great friend of the show, VSiN's own Will Hill, to the Progressive Guest Line, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast, part of the Fox Sports Bear Bets pod with Chris Felica as well. And you heard Michael Lombardi there, who gives that reaction because he has some very important questions for Will Hill to get us started.
Well, you know, a man that's in charge of most all scheduling, except he doesn't take accountability for the slow pace of the Sunday games and the 9:40 start of the NCAA tournament. But I'd like to know, what do you have in store for the Wednesday games on Christmas Day? What matchups are you thinking about putting teams together?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, that's late in the season. It's enough of a scheduling quirk, and that's going to be a huge disadvantage. I would think to play on the Wednesday, you can't make it a flex deal, so those are going to have to be set in stone. I mean, this past Christmas, we saw the Chiefs on Christmas, saw the Eagles, Ravens, 49ers, a good game. So I would think they would try to give you some big games, some marquee teams. So TBD, but I don't think they're going to give you, the Titans versus the Patriots or something like that. I would think they're going to try to give you some juicy matchups, and they are really, NBA Silver's head must be spinning, because for a while this was NBA's day. They could kind of own the day, and, you know, NBA Christmas, it was synonymous. Now it is all NFL. It's like The Wire. They're taking whatever corners they want. They're like Marlowe.
They will not give another sport an
inch.
They
are like Marlowe. They are like Marlo. There's no question. Yeah. And but, you know, you're going to be in that room. You orchestrate it. So please, you know, make sure you share with us what you decide.
Of course.
Very important stuff. You also moved along the kickoff today. So new kickoff rules. Well done. Well, you've been very, very busy in addition to handicapping college basketball. So let's get into it because our Sweet 16 is officially set. I cannot help but notice you are fading my Aztecs in a repeat of the national championship a year ago. The UConn Huskies look like a bulldozer. They look like a juggernaut. They're playing awesome right now. So I don't blame you for laying the 11, but it does hurt my heart because I thought that we were friends and I thought that, you know, you liked me more than that.
Look at Stormy trying to talk up the opponent, trying to sweet talk the Huskies and try to catch them off guards Thursday. Yeah, look, it's cool that we got a rematch of the title game. I don't think that's happened too many times. I have a feeling it's going to look similar to the title game where, look, Dutcher's good. He's a good coach. He's going to have a good game plan. You're going to give him time to prepare. I don't know that there's enough answers for UConn. They're so versatile. They're so explosive. If you got futures on UConn, if you're rooting for UConn, you do have to wonder, like, the back of your head, hey, at some point, this is 2 years in a row now, this is 8 tournament games, at some point, are they just due for a bad night and they're just not going to click? But they're just so good. I mean, they're just so good, and it's a big rest travel advantage. They haven't gotten on a plane in a long time. They're going to be playing in Boston. Meanwhile, San Diego State, they got done. I mean, the start times of these games is ridiculous. They got done midnight, 1 o'clock on the East Coast, and they played in Spokane, Washington. Now they're going to have to get on a plane, play the early game Thursday in Boston, different coast. Tough turnaround. I just think UConn pulls away. So UConn minus the points, I'm okay with. I'm a little nervous laying the points with how good these favorites have done. Eventually, you figure the worm turns here and these underdogs start to make a little bit of a comeback. But I think UConn pulls away. Hurley is just, look, they don't take their foot off the gas. Lombardi, I remember you wrote a while ago, you had lunch, I think, with Bob Knight, and he said he's harder on his teams when they play the bad teams because he knows when they play the good teams, his teams automatically get up. You saw Hurley the other day against Stetson, against Northwestern. I mean, they're at 40 points against Stetson. He's chewing his team out. He doesn't take his foot off the gas. So to me, UConn rolls here.
Well, they play to a standard. They don't play to the opponent. That's the key. And that's why they're so good, because there's a standard they set for themselves that they have to get to, that he demands they get to. And he's not looking to go to Dairy Queen. He's looking to get to the standard. So that's really important. And for all the talk about you can't coach that way, this guy clearly can, and it's been successful. But let's talk about Clemson, Arizona for a second. You know, I was one of those idiots that fell for the New Mexico trap. I didn't have Clemson even getting past New Mexico. So here they are in the Sweet 16 playing really well. The ACC has been well represented. Arizona looked legit the other day. But you like Clemson and the points here, Will.
I do, and that's another point with UConn over San Diego State. Like, I've defended the Mountain West. I kind of like watching those teams. I kind of like those teams. Well, let's face it. The Mountain West has not had a good showing in recent memory in tournaments, aside from San Diego State making the final. But, look, I think Clemson, Arizona is interesting. They're both big. They both like to play through their bigs, get to the rim. You got to keep Arizona out of transition, and you got to make them jump shooters. I think Clemson can do that. It's interesting. Clemson, their opponents have shot, I think, 9 of 47, 9 of 48 from three the first two games. New Mexico couldn't hit a three. Baylor couldn't hit a three or a free throw. So that's kind of why they're here. But I think Clemson has some of the components to at least give themselves a chance, slow the game down, compete at the rim, keep them away from the rim. And we saw Oregon do this to Arizona in the conference tournament, muck the game up, play a zone, and just make them jump shooters. And if Arizona's going to make shots, look, you tip your cap and say, you know what, you beat us, we're going home. But you know, it's like playing a great offense in the NFL. It's like facing a great hitter in baseball. You can't take away everything. I think Clemson at least has the ability to take away the rim and just make them outside shooters, and you live with the results. So I'll take the 7.5 here. I think Arizona probably wins the game, but the 7.5 looks a little high. I think Clemson can at least hang in this game.
Will Hill, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast, joining us on the Progressive guest line here. And while Clemson certainly bounced back after a poor performance in the ACC tournament, NC State has just been riding hot ever since. Won 5 games in 5 days, 7-11 between these two wins in the NCAA tournament. They have been so much fun to watch. Can they keep it up in a tough contest with Marquette? They're the lone double-digit seed still remaining here in the field.
I think they could. Speaking of Dairy Queen, I love this guy Burns. He is so much fun to watch. He's so good around the basket. He's got such, like, he would be a good football player if basketball doesn't work, because he's got such soft touch. He's a great passer. He's so light on his feet. And you put 4 shooters around him, it's really tough with the way they space the floor. You can't take away everything. So NC State's going to have success on offense. As I'm talking about this, I like the over a little bit better, because I do think Marquette will have some success. I think you can put Burns in pick and rolls. I think Kolick You know, is a tremendous college player, and they might make things uncomfortable for the NC State defense. So I think both offenses will have success. I think NC State has enough success on offense to hang in this game. But again, as I'm talking about this, maybe this is an over game because I don't know that either team has good a good roster to stop the other one. So high scoring, close game. I'll take NC State, and I'll probably end up betting the over too.
All right, don't break Elliott's heart here, Will. You know, he's been rumming up. He's doing good. He's positive. He's Purdue. Gonzaga comes. You're going to take the 5.5 in Gonzaga. But tell Elliott they're going to win, but it'll be by 3, not by 5.
Yeah, they're going to win, Elliott. Don't worry. This is you're looking at like a redo of the Maui where they're just running into all these teams from November. I like that aspect from Gonzaga. Maybe you wait and you hope you can get a 6 because, again, these favorites have just been so good that maybe the public just says, hey, I'm betting the favorites. They're winning for him. I'm going to keep betting them. Eventually, these books jack up the prices. But I like the fact that Gonzaga, this is going to be their third time playing Purdue since last Thanksgiving. And Edie is such a difficult guy to prep for. He's so unique. The fact that they've seen him already, and they've actually got some bodies they can throw at him in EK and Huff. Now, look, if they get in a foul trouble, this might be a good live betting opportunity because Gonzaga is not a deep team. So if EK gets a couple fouls, Huff gets a couple early fouls, this could get away from Gonzaga, just like it got away from Utah State, where Utah State was up 24-20, and the next thing you know, they're down by basically 100 points. But I think Gonzaga can hang in this game. You go back to the November matchup, Gonzaga led by 5 at the half, and they end up losing the game, but Gonzaga only shot 6 of 32 from 3. They've been really good shooting the 3 recently, so if they can make some 3s, we've seen Purdue have their moments where they stumble in the tournament, so close game. I'll take the points here, and I hope for Elliott's case his Boilermakers are marching on.
So I don't have Purdue as a future. I do have North Carolina, and I added UConn after Auburn got kicked out of the East region of the bracket. What futures are you riding out, and is there anybody worth firing on in your opinion?
Yeah, I don't. I have a little UConn too. I would if you really want to, boy, Arizona 9-1. I feel like they're being slept on. Remember, if they get to the Final Four, that Final Four is in Arizona, and you know that's going to be a nice little home court advantage. So Arizona 9-1 might be getting slept on. If you want a real long shot, I know Illinois doesn't probably play enough defense to actually win this thing, but if they can ever upset UConn, and look, they could easily lose to Iowa State, that might be the game of the week, and the schedule is awesome. Illinois is really good on offense. If they can string together enough stops, Illinois 35-1, maybe. But again, if you like any of these teams, maybe you just play them game by game. But if you're looking for like a real outside the box long shot, maybe Illinois 35-1.
Well,
I love it. Do you have a favorite in the women's tournament? Are you going to any? Have you been studying the women's tournament too?
No, I have not. What, South Carolina is undefeated, right?
Yep.
Probably going to be them. I mean, I know that I think they were minus money going in, and watched a little bit of Iowa last night. That was a close game. So it's fun time of year. Basketball is always on. I know you talk about Al Davis used to love the women's tournament and, you know, fill out brackets and send the players letters, things like that. So fun time of year.
Yeah, South Carolina's minus 150 to win it all, and that still might be a discount of what, like, they're just so good. They're dominating everybody. Last minute, Will, just curious your thoughts, since you are a draft bettor, on all the movement around J.J. McCarthy and maybe advice to folks that see these markets move.
Yeah, I mean, if you see news that you can get McCarthy at 20-1, okay, it's worth a shot. But now that it's 2-1, I mean, you're kind of late to the party here. I don't think it's going to happen. I get it if you're taking a shot at 20-1. It's all information with the draft. These books are so quick to move now. It's hard to catch them napping. So at 2-1, I probably wouldn't bet it.
Appreciate your time, buddy. Good luck with your bets. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See ya. Thanks for having me.
That's Will Hill. Follow him on X at Not The Will Hill. And of course, the Shoulda Bet More podcast. You can download wherever you get your podcasts. He also does a great job with Chris Felica and the Bear Bets pod, part of that gambling group chat with Sammy P and Jeff Schwartz. We're going to hit the break here when we return. Gridiron Goldilocks. We're looking at more season win totals in the National Football League. Are they too high, too low, or just right? Michael, help us out. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use our code Lombardi when you sign up, and that'll get you a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager right now. Speaking of DraftKings, This week, DraftKings released NFL season win totals for all 32 teams. Yesterday, we looked at the teams with the highest win total, the Chiefs, 49ers, Ravens, all at 11.5, as well as the more bottom of the barrel teams. We're talking 4.5. We're talking Carolina Panthers. It was not good. So today, we're going to kind of continue to tier this out as we get through each and every one, Michael. But now we're going to look at all of the teams that have high expectations, teams that are also considered contenders. Their win total set over double digits, over 10.5. Let's start here with the Buffalo Bills, who find a way yet again to win the division. The Dolphins, I'm sure, are trying to creep their way up. The Jets, you know, they're the ifers, but if they pull everything together, could have success. How do you think that the Buffalo Bills will fare in the division? And is that win total too high, too low, or just right as we open up this gridiron Goldilocks?
Well, I think it's a little low, but I hesitate to say that because I don't think they're the same team they were last year, right? They've lost some defensive linemen. Now, they were fortunate enough they were get Daquan Jones back, which I think was huge. But they've lost a lot of players, and you know, through the cap and through what they've had to do. But they still have the great Josh Allen, so you can't go too far down on them. I think it's probably a little light because I just don't think Miami, I don't think New England, and I don't think that the ifers have caught up to them. So I think they're going to gain that. They're still going to be tough to play. I like their team. I mean, it's their quarterback. And I think anytime it's hard to bet an under with a great quarterback, I would say that should be a golden rule.
And with that thought process, the over is juiced to a minus 145 price where things sit right now. The Bills coming off an 11-win season in 2023. How about the Cincinnati Bengals, who saw their season derailed without their star quarterback, Joe Burrow, who missed the bulk of the season? Their win total also set at that 10.5, slight juice to the over as well, but just a minus 120 tax. Too high, too low, or just right for Cincinnati?
I think it's just right, and I lean towards the over here. I think with Burrow coming back, assuming they don't trade T. Higgins, which I don't believe they will, they've added to their team. I think Zach Moss will help them at running back. Geno Stone and Von Bell will give them better safety play. If they can get something out of Trent Brown at right tackle, it'll be an upgrade over Jonah Williams at right tackle if he's minds right to play. I think they've improved their team. Now, they've, you know, their corner situation has got to also improve. They've got to be able to, you know, they signed Sheldon Rankins to replace DJ Reader, but they have a draft ahead of them. So I think they're going to need to get a couple picks in this draft that really come in and make a difference. You know, Tyler Boyd's still out there, and which is interesting because, you know, everybody probably thought, well, you know, he's going to get a huge deal. Obviously, he's not getting what he wants in the open market for an inside slot receiver. So they might even get him back on a cheap deal if he wants to come back. But the reality of betting the over here is Burrow. Right. Burrow, Chase, the defense will be better because they got better players in communication. I like the over, if anything, here, but I think the number's just right.
Yeah, Jake Browning still got him to 9. So you imagine when you have one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League, you should be able to have a little more success. That AFC North, though, is very tough, at least just to look at on paper where things sit right now. How about the Detroit Lions? They end up going to an NFC championship this past year, a 12-win season. The one knock on this roster was the secondary and the defense, I guess, in general here. With their win total sitting 10.5, they made some additions already during the free agent period. Too high, too low, or just right for this team that is trying to really build into a sustainable contender?
I think the North's going to be good this year. I think with Caleb Williams going to Chicago, that'll make them better. They'll have a passing game. And I think Green Bay's a really good young team. And depends on what Minnesota does at the quarterback position or if they just play Darnold, they're better on defense. So I think Detroit can be a better team. Don't know if they're going to get the 12 wins. I lean towards the over. I like the signing of DJ Reader. I like the trade for Carlton Davis to get him to come in there and play. So I think they've improved their secondary. They also added Amik Robinson. They replaced Jonah Jackson with Kevin Zeitler. So that's a one-for-one exchange. They added Marcus Davenport, see if they can get him some more pass rush coming off the edge. But I like their team. I think their team will be improved. And their offense is really good. They've got a great combination. So I like what they've done, and I lean the over. The problem is I think everybody else has had a good offseason in the North.
Yeah. The Lions, with that, are the favorite plus 150 in the NFC North, but the Packers, certainly a team that's on their way up. The Bears, hopeful that when they bring in Caleb Williams and all the other things that they have done through free agency, that they'll take a significant step forward. The Vikings, the longest shot there at 10-1. The Dallas Cowboys, Michael, three straight 12-win seasons, and we talk about it every day on the program. Absolutely nothing to show for it in the playoffs, but that doesn't matter because their win total set at 10.5 for the regular season. Too high, too low, or just right for this Cowboys team that seems to always get over it.
Too high. And because I think there's a perception they're really a talented team, and they have some talented players, right? But they're missing some really good players. Now, they're going to get Diggs back in their secondary, which will help. You know, Gilmore's still out there. They haven't signed him. They don't have a running back on the team. They signed Rico Dowdle, you know, but he wasn't a great back. The offensive line has lost two starters in it already. Can they come back? They have no cap room. They've really only signed Eric Kendricks and their long snapper back. You know, they've signed, you know, Jordan Lewis back and C.J. Goodwin back. But for me, I think this team has taken a huge step back. And even though I didn't think they were as talented as everybody felt, the depth of this team is going to take a hit. And that offensive line, one of the reasons they didn't play well on the road, Stormy, is because their offensive line struggled on the road. It really did. And, you know, when they played Miami in Miami, they were not good enough. They should have beaten Miami. But I think, to me, this is a team that was overrated, and this number at 10.5 is too inflated. I think just right is 9.5. I think 9.5 is the right number, because I can't really say to you that they're going to be a better team than they were last year. I really can't. They've got a lot of issues. Yep. They're going to need a great draft, and they're picking in the 20s.
Yeah, my favorite phrase with the Cowboys this offseason so far is they've done a whole lot of nada. And so they're basically fielding the same team, if not like missing some pieces from what they've done. And we got the report earlier today from Ian Rappaport that there's no indications on a deal moving forward with Dak Prescott right now. So they're not going to be able to afford to do a whole lot more either. And Mike McCarthy, of course, on the last year of his deal. So it's a very interesting situation in Dallas. Let's keep it in the East, though, because the Philadelphia Eagles did make a move, most significantly bringing in Saquon Barkley to help support their quarterback in Jalen Hurts. With the win total at 10.5, the plus money is to the over, plus 110, juice minus 135 to the under on Philadelphia. Too high, too low, or just right at 10.5?
I think it's right at 10.5. I lean towards the over here. I mean, Philly's put a lot of emphasis on improving their offense. You know, they've got a really good offensive line. They signed Landon Dickinson to a contract extension. They add Barkley, this is the first time Barkley's going to play behind a really good line. And I think the Barkley move helps Hurts tremendously, because it gives him, you know, that back that he didn't have this year. Even though we saw Swift play well, it wasn't the same kind of power. It wasn't the same. And I think Barkley, if he stays healthy, then he certainly can fill that void. Now, they've got a lot to go on defense, right? I definitely think they've improved with their outside pass rush, Shine and Bryce Huff. But they're going to need more. They're going to need to improve their secondary. I like their offseason. I really have. I think they've added some depth to their team. The linebacking, they haven't handled that yet. I know they've signed Oren Burks, but they really haven't handled that yet. They're going to need to get that fixed. They're going to need to draft some corners as well.
We got two more at 10.5 here, Michael, in the last 90 seconds. The Atlanta Falcons, of course, bring in Kirk Cousins. They become a big favorite in the NFC South. Have they done enough, though, to be considered an over 10.5 win team? The Dolphins, that number as well, yeah, who has a lot of question marks on that defense right now. What do you think about those two?
Well, I think the Dolphins are definitely an underplay here. They haven't beaten a good team yet. We haven't seen them beat a good team, and they're not as good defensively this year as they were last year. Atlanta, I think that's a stretch to go up to 10.5. I really do. Because are we sure Atlanta's a really good team? You know, whenever you think you're one player away, you never are. You never are. Now, Kirk Cousins is going to make them better. But does that mean they're deep? They still can't rush the passer, right? They still can't rush the passer. And, you know, they struggled. When they went down and played New Orleans late in the year, they struggled. So Tampa came back on him in a game at home. Baker Mayfield drove 80 yards to win the game. And this was when, you know, we knew Arthur Smith wasn't getting fired. So for me, I think we tend to go a little bit too far in one direction. I think 10 may be a good number for them, not 10.5.
Great stuff as always, Michael. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you, Stormy.
For those of you watching on DraftKings Network, Pablo Torre is coming up next. More great sports betting content on VSiN with Patrick Maher and the Sharp Money Crew. Have a great day.